Welcome back to the Scaling Tech Podcast, the podcast for leaders of software engineering teams. I'm your host, Aaron Syme. In today's episode, we're going to explore a user interface modality that if you're not using it already in your applications, you probably will soon. While AI may get all the hype, the interface we're talking about today is voice, and you'll see that the two topics are closely related. Using a tool like ChatGPT is fun, but it's rare that science fiction paints a future where we're typing out our conversations with AI. It's pretty much always voice-based, and we can expect that the AI chatbots of the future will actually chat with us verbally. The technology is very nearly there, and so as engineering managers, you need to start thinking about how voice interfaces combined with AI will bring additional value to your users and your organization. That's why today we're going to speak with Tobias Dingle, a technology leader and author of a book about voice technology. So let's get to our interview with Tobias.
Welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast, where we help you manage your growing engineering team. Through expert interviews, we help you navigate the challenges of leading, hiring, growing, and nurturing your tech team to deliver the value your customers demand. Brought to you by agilityfeet.com. Experts in staffing engineering teams in Latin America for clients globally.
Tobias Dingle is president of WillowTree, a TELUS International company, a global leader in digital product design and development, working with clients from Fortune 500 companies to large government agencies. Tobias is also author of The Sound of the Future, The Coming Age of Voice Technology. Welcome to the Scaling Tech Podcast, Tobias.
Hi, Aaron. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And by the way, I noticed recently you were also nominated for a Mid-Atlantic Entrepreneur of the Year Award. So congrats on that also. Pleased to have you here with us.
Yeah, thank you.
In your book, The Sound of the Future, you've made a big claim that voice technology is as revolutionary as mobile apps were a decade ago and as big a change as the internet in the 1990s. So what makes this change so dramatic?
Yeah, so you got to take a step back when you're thinking about technology and what user needs does it really fulfill. And what we want to avoid is falling in love with the technology for tech's sake. If you'd been at in Vegas at big tech conferences in 2011-12, you would have heard that 3D TV was going to be the next big thing and that by 2020, all of us would have 3D TVs. I know one person right now who has a 3D TV in their house, and I would put them on the kind of lunatic fringe of early of any new technology. And I think Google Glass had some of that same phenomenon going on. And we, you know, in our business, we're always getting asked by clients, like, what's next, right? We've been on this mobile wave for 15 years now. What's the next big thing? And we've always been looking at every trend, everything that's happening. And voice really got us interested because up until ChatGPT, it was the fastest adoption of any new technology that we'd seen. But it hadn't really changed the world the way mobile had or the internet had. So we were thinking, is this really a big trend? Is voice a big deal or is it not? And I think that's really the subject of the book. If you really break down what voice is good at, and what it can do and what it's not good at, and you start optimizing the experience to those things, you end up in a conclusion that, holy crap, this is a really, really big deal. And the primary interface with which we are going to be interacting with devices, especially inputting into devices over the coming few years in very short order, is going to be voice, and it will have the same types of impact as mobile did or the internet did. And a lot of those are second, third order impacts that we can't predict, right? The example I always use is Uber. When Steve Jobs announces the iPhone, not a lot of people were sitting around saying, you know what, the taxi industry is in real trouble. Right. So when these adoptions happen, these cycles happen, it's the second and third order things that really catch people off guard. And the book is an attempt to kind of lay out the case for that and how that might evolve over the next two, 3 years.
Yeah, I like your encouragement there to not, you know, get too excited about the technology. I mean, as technologists, you and I both are, you know, it's kind of our job, right, sometimes to go get an early version of the Google Glass and try it out, or Apple Vision Pro, or, you know, I had the early Alexa Show devices, things like that, and to get excited about them. But just because, say, Google Glass didn't take off doesn't mean that the concept of augmented reality is dead. You know, things like that are happening and will happen in the future. Same with voice interfaces. The fact that, you know, use Alexa Show to talk to friends with on video chat is not an indication that the concept of voice or the integration of video chat is not revolutionary. We can't get too hung up on a particular technology or a particular product implementation of that technology. And I do think there's a lot of tremendous amount of potential in voice, but it has been around for over a decade at this point. And, you know, I've had multiple voice assistant type of devices before, as have many, but why hasn't it had a larger impact? Why don't we use things like Alexa or even Siri more often or in more general use cases?
Yeah, so I think when you look at technologies and their evolution, first of all, they all take time, right? The internet from like, it really started to evolve in the early 90s and then AOL, and it was really the late 90s, 2000 until it really got into its prime. Same with mobile. I mean, we were doing mobile things even when I was at AOL in the late 90s, and then we had WAP, and then we had Blackberries, and all that was nice, but it wasn't life-changing the way the iPhone happened. So these things evolve over time, and usually those evolutions are happening due to a confluence of different technologies that are all hitting at the same time and seem unrelated, but when you combine them, a breakthrough happens. So that's what's going on in one sense with voice right now. The second thing to think about is, you know, when you think about satisfying human needs, and this is really how the first half of the book is organized, is we have all these needs that we can apply to technology. So, for example, a need for efficiency, right, and productivity. It does something make us more effective at doing what we have to do? And does it reduce friction? Is there a safety mechanism? Is there a way to expand audiences? Is it fun? All those things have to add up, and you need two or three of them for a new technology to be effective. In this case, when you stack up those variables, voice is one of the very few technologies that satisfies every single one. So the question you asked is, well, great, why hasn't it changed the world yet? The answer is we're not using it right. And we are, as an industry, we have made the classic mistake that we all make with new technologies, is that we try to simulate or emulate a technology that already exists or something that already exists, right? So the first TV shows were really broadcasts of radio shows, right? Because that was the natural thing. When I was at AOL, like the first magazine websites were basically PDFs. I remember Time Magazine on AOL was a PDF of Time Magazine. It wasn't a PDF, but basically was. And everyone's like, well, what's the point of that? It's harder to read. You can't flip through pages as fast. The sampling speed's lower. Like, how does that solve anything? But then over 3, 4, 5 years, people figured out how to optimize for that medium. That's what's going on in voice, right? We've tried to simulate human conversation, which is a natural thing to do. Like, you say, okay, I got voice. Let's simulate human conversation. But that's actually not the best use. And the reason is, the reason we all want to use voice or start using voice is we can speak 3 times as fast as we can type, 5 times as fast as on a mobile device with our thumbs, right? So it's got this massive productivity increase. That's why we're always speaking into our devices. But it's also much slower to listen than it is to read. So the natural place that this is going to end up is that we speak into our devices and we get the information back, either we read it or it's graphical or the device just does what we want it to do. And it's not this voice two-way street that we've created, because it's actually interesting. When you study it, if you have to speak something and then listen, it's actually slower than just using the app. But right, if you speak something and it does something, it's much faster. So the example I always use is movie tickets, right? We all want to ask Alexa or Siri what movies are playing tonight. We do not want to listen to, you know, 5 movies with 3 showtimes each. Like, we can't remember that. It's super slow. It's, you know, it's movie phone from 20 years ago, 30 years ago, whenever that we had movie phone. But what we want is the app just to show us the movies. And then we say, all right, Star Wars at 8, get me 2 tickets. I'm voice authenticated. Boom. And now you've taken an experience that in an app today, which is already really efficient, still takes 3-4 minutes. And you've taken that to 20 to 30 seconds. everything we know about human behavior and technology is if you take something from 3 minutes to 30 seconds, it's a game changer. And the companies that adopt this mindset first are going to have a massive competitive advantage.
That's a great example. And I forgot about Movie Phone. blast from the past there. But you made me think too of the, you know, the efficiency and the importance of the efficiency of that. If you're buying those movie tickets and the voice reads back to you, okay, we'll buy you two tickets at 8 o'clock. Would you like to use your credit card ending in blah, 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 right? That takes a lot more time than just showing you on the screen, you know, Apple Pay, double click, boom, done, right? So that sort of multimodal interaction and not being completely reliant on the voice is really interesting. So I guess that makes me kind of question something I've heard people say at AI and voice conferences before, predicting that voice interfaces will completely replace keyboards in a decade from now. What do you think about a statement like that?
Yeah, so I think because we will be transmitting largely via voice and because the keyboard is the mechanic we transmit, I think there's some truth to that. I think as a backup for a long period of time, we'll need keyboards, but I think we're going to get to a less and less keyboarded world. I think what's interesting about that, if you study the history of the keyboard, right, it's this artifact of history that that's the interface we use to interact with computers. But the keyboard was actually invented to slow typing down, right? People were typing so fast that typewriters back, you know, 150 years ago were getting jammed. So they're like, how do we design this thing to slow it down? And we've just inherited this device. So I welcome the massive reduction of keyboard use that I think will result in this. When I look at my kids at home, I mean, they, you know, they still use keyboard for certain things, but they're using voice all the time. They're, you know, we have a Google Home, so they're asking it like for sports scores. They're asking it for information. They expect when they want to watch something on TV that they just say, hey, I want to watch Game of Thrones episode, you know, season 3, episode 4. Boom, there it is. Like it's right. They're like, why would it be anything else than that? And I think that just ease of interface is what we're moving towards.
I always think back to my high school education, which was before the internet. And the most important class I probably took in retrospect in high school was a typing class. So maybe someday, you know, perhaps my grandkids will take a voice interface class or maybe not because it comes so naturally to them, to all of us, obviously. But let's back up a little bit. Tell us a bit about your work at WillowTree and how you became interested in voice interfaces.
Yeah. So our clients are asking us all the time what's next. And we are, you know, have spent a lot of time looking at different interfaces to make things more and more efficient. We started building things like Alexa Skills 6-7 years ago. And those were really disappointing in terms of the market uptake. And, you know, some of it was discoverability. Like you didn't know what had a skill, what didn't. Some of it was trust. You didn't know, like, is Amazon in the middle of this? If I start asking if I tie my bank account to this and my bank account is like giving me my balance, does Amazon somehow know my bank balance? Then there were, of course, still in the trust area, a lot of reports that Amazon was listening. This whole concept of a wake word seemed really problematic, that the system has to listen all the time while you, in order to wait for the wake word, and then you could mess with it pretty easily, or, you know, we could be on a Zoom and someone could say Siri, and then all of a sudden, boom, in the background, or, you know, Alexa, something happens in the background. So there were all sorts of issues with that, and we started to break it apart. Why do people want voice again? Because it's faster. And we came to the conclusion, you know what? People are going to want voice on the device that they already have in their pocket, always on, always with you. They're just going to want to interface with apps, right? And that was kind of our main business. Now, you know, we're much broader, kind of full digital service provider, but still apps is an important part, optimizing mobile applications. And it just became very obvious to us, if you have a relation, the brands you have a relationship with, whether it's a bank, airline, et cetera, you already have the app. You can just, it's really fast to get to the app and get, you know, turn it on. But then once you're there, then you want to be using your voice. That became to us, you know, such an obvious place that this was all going to go. But we had a little bit of a hard time explaining it to people, which is why we wrote the book, is to say, you know what, there's a whole train of logic that gets you to this conclusion that the highest and best use of voice in many scenarios is going to be the interface to the app or an interface to a device, right? There's a whole area that we talk about that around safety, as an example, that cockpits of the future are going to be voice activated by pilots. You know, what's a cockpit? It's nothing more than a human interface to interface with a machine. It's got a lot of things you can control of that machine, but that's precisely why voice is so powerful, because you can simplify all that. And that's not some theoretic, you know, idea. Both the U.S. Air Force and the Russian Air Force have voice-first cockpits right now for exactly that reason, right? Super high-stress situations. You want to make it as easy as possible for someone to make a decision and get the machine to do what you want it to do. And so that, you know, this just, as you think about it and you dive deeper and deeper into it, it just becomes a more and more obvious place that human-machine interface is going to end up.
No, that makes sense. And I mean, I think the airplane cockpit is a really interesting example. And just to nerd out a little bit, I'm reading one of the Dune books after the movies that are out now. No spoiler alerts to be given here. But there's a point where a character has this vision of the past and they realize it's in the past because they're in a spaceship that has controls that they can use with their hands instead of just, you know, voice or talking to the AI, basically. So, you know, this is a concept that certainly we see in science fiction, but we are, you know, able to see a lot of this in reality now, and certainly will continue to.
Yeah, I forgot about that. I was a huge fan of the Dune books as a kid. I got to, if there's a next version of the book, I'm going to include that example. That's awesome.
There you go. So, I mean, but this concept of voice technology is a really large term. There's all sorts of different ways that we can use voice as an interface. Give us a couple of other use cases for voice.
The way to think about it from a getting information or data from a human being to a device, anytime that there's an extended amount of information, which there is in our lives all the time, right? We're typing all the time. All of those processes can be three times as fast. So you think about everything we're doing at work all day long, et cetera. And I talked earlier about different technologies coming together to really unleash this. The advent of Gen AI and large language models is really pushing this forward at an accelerated pace for two reasons. One is we can use the LLMs to actually interpret what you're saying, to do the transcription much more effectively. I think most of us have probably noticed over the last 6 months, when we use voice tools on our mobile devices, often 2-3 seconds after we stop speaking, what looked first like, oh my gosh, Siri screwed it up completely, boom, all of a sudden it self-corrects itself. That's because we've applied a Gen AI algorithm and they're helping us fix it. And so that was always a big frustration of voice, especially if you had an accent that, you know, how do you, the transcription was screwed up. And if the transcription screwed up and you got to go back and fix it, you lose a lot of the advantage. But that's, Gen AI is helping fix that. But it's also helping fix the interpretation, the inference, and the response. And it's learning your style, as an example. So you could say, all right, if I'm an author or I write a lot as a CEO, a lot of marketing materials, I can feed it everything I've ever written. And then say, you know, give it some short commands, say, write this in the way that I have written things in the past. Again, that's allowing voice to be this vehicle of transmission. The second thing is shortcuts in essence. So the average app for like a financial institution has over 300 pieces of functionality, right? So some of them you use every day, check your balance, blah, blah, blah. Some of them you use occasionally, like check payment update, et cetera. Some of them you use rarely, like if you have to reorder checks. And if I asked you, hey, can you use your bank app to reorder checks? Your blood pressure is going to go up right away because you're going to say, it's probably in there somewhere, but it's going to be a giant pain in the ass to find. And that's like the perfect example where you should be able to shortcut and just say, I want to order new checks. And the applications of those kinds of things in the enterprise are even, you know, much more, you know, productivity enhancing and obvious. So, for example, we work with a large beverage manufacturer in the United States, and they have literally 1,200 different types of machines, vending machines, machines in bars and restaurants, et cetera, that need servicing. And now we're able to, they have mobile devices. If they're standing in front of a machine, they can just say, all right, order this part for this machine, and it does it all And it used to take them 15 minutes to like type it all in, find it in the catalog, blah, blah, blah. And so that's like these shortcuts are super, super important. And I think the other thing it's going to unleash in terms of user interface is long tail search terms. So one of the reasons that we don't like to do like a 12 or 15 or 20 word search into certainly on our mobile devices, but also on our desktop, it just takes a long time to type. And then if you don't get the right answer, you kind of wasted a lot of time. But if you can just say these long searches, it takes a third of the time. And so we've seen long tail searches getting you to the right information have increased rapidly. And again, use cases in the enterprises asking, you know, questions to your HR systems about like how many days you might, or can you combine like days off with paternity leave or whatever it is. These more complicated questions are all getting unleashed right now with the support of the underlying Gen AI models.
Oh, that's really cool. And I hadn't thought about the long tail search. The value of that in working with a search engine is clear, getting you more specific information. But I hadn't thought about the impact that voice interfaces can have on making that easier for us to use. So that's a really good one. Another one I want to give a little plug for another interview series that I do called WebRTC Live about video applications, specifically with my company, WebRTC Ventures. And we had an episode in January 2024, and this year, where we talked about accessibility in video applications. And one of our guests from a company, Be My Eyes, talked about using voice interfaces for blind and low vision users to still be able to interact with video chat applications, to be able to do things, you know, out in the field with their mobile device. And there was a really cool example that we talked about and had a little video in there of one of their users being able to use their app. And although they are blind, they're able to use the app to take a picture of something that they're looking at in the store. The application using Gen AI and video AI is able to read, you know, the label on that, tell them what it is. Everything that they do in interacting with them was all through a voice interface. And then they're able to ask, you know, what is this that I'm looking at? What kind of recipes could I make with this? The Gen AI, you know, gives them some recipes and talks to them about other ingredients. And so a really cool way to provide assistance to, you know, individuals to allow them to live a more full life, basically. And that was based, you know, on a combination of video AI technology, Gen AI, LLMs, and voice interfaces. So there's so many cool applications for this that will help, you know, a wide range of people and make things really, you know, more accessible and usable for all of us, really.
Yeah, it is. It's a tremendous area that's being unleashed by voice, and in some ways, you know, really counterintuitive ways. So we had one of our developers who whose significant other had got GBS, and she was not able to do anything but move her eyes. And so when that happens, you're in the hospital and the caregiver is holding up basically an alphabet of letters and pointing to things, and eyes go up and down, yes or no, as you might be able to guess. Spelling things out one letter at a time while people are pointing at it is brutally slow.
Yeah.
So we were able to use, you know, eye detection. We can see where people are looking. And so that was an immediate improvement. But now what we've done is used Gen AI so that if you're the caretaker, you can ask the patient, you know, are you too hot or too cold? And because Gen AI is listening, we have Gen AI create likely answers. So it'll say yes or no. And then if you say, you know, yes, I'm too hot, it'll ask you what your temperature is. It'll present options on temperature, and you just got to look at the temperature. And we've been able to get to a call and response kind of mechanic that almost mimics the same speed of human conversation. So now people can basically speak with their eyes. It's an amazing, the stories we get from how it's changed people's lives, just amazing.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's really inspiring and a really powerful example of, you know, voice not only being an interface, but also an output as well. So yeah, that's really, really interesting. So let's talk a little bit about how developing a voice application is different than regular software development. You know, our audience for the Scaling Tech podcast, primarily engineering managers, what do they need to consider when building in a voice interface into their application for the first time?
Yeah, so I think the theory and the processes are the same. Some of the tools are different, right? So it's always about finding use cases and user journeys and really applying a multimodal mindset. And that, and I think that's where historically a lot of the voice cases have broken down. People are like, all right, I know I'm trying to solve XYZ problem, but in the paradigm, they had like a voice team at a company and they were just designing voice to voice. And it really has to be a combination of your existing software development team that's doing the app, you know, the mobile apps and or the website, working together with a team that's thinking about things in a voice first basis, and having from day one this multimodal approach, like what is going to be faster, you know, reading, what's going to be faster using haptics or something. You know, there's this whole conversational concept that, you know, when human beings speak with each other, as much of the communication is around expression or what they're doing with their hands or their posture or their eyes, and it is what they're saying. Devices do the same thing. Your device vibrates if you get the password wrong, or it's, you know, there's a Siri pops up. So there's a way that you get to two-way communication on a real-time basis. And I think the most interesting thing that's going on from an efficiency standpoint, when you think about this multimodal, is that when you are saying something to device, if the transcription is happening and you're showing the user this transcription, and in the background, the app is like, if you're doing a fast food order, building the order, you're going from call and response, you're going to, concurrent communication for really the first time ever, is that you're communicating and the machine's reacting multimodally in a real way. That's why this multimodal mindset is so important. So that's one piece. I think the tooling that we use on, you know, there's a lot of voice kind of optimized tool sets that are out there, and I'm, you know, you can, you know, test them. Each one has different applications. One's called VoiceFlow that I think is specifically designed to help create multimodal voice experiences, easy to use. But, so you first have to design the experience, and then you have to, just like anything else, implement it. Most of the voice experiences, if you're doing it inside an app, are just sitting on top of the APIs you already have, right? That's the idea. So now you're going to use a variety of different components. And I think what, you know, with Android, some of these come with the OS, and some of them you can get from lots of different vendors. Our big hope has always been that Apple opens up Siri for kind of full developer deployment, because I think that will really be the breakthrough. Right now, you have to use third-party tools, of which there are a variety. I would test a variety when you kind of are looking at programs. But that's going to be, I think, the big breakthrough. And there's some hints. If you look at some of the Mac rumor sites, et cetera, you can see that, you know, people are watching, like, what's getting patented or what's getting, you know, right, what's in some of the preview software. And there's a feeling in the developer community that soon, and I don't know what soon means, Apple's going to actually make these voice tools much, much easier to use for the developer community. And that, I think, will be the big breakthrough.
Yeah, that is definitely something to look forward to and would be very cool. I think just a wise business decision from Apple too, to do that, quite honestly, because there are an increasing number of APIs out there that help you work with things like voice and Gen AI and video. And so, you know, they don't want to be the last to do that, I don't think, for sure. But obviously, it's a very powerful, you know, model that they have with Siri. What do you think is kind of the biggest thing holding back voice application development? Is it the closed nature of Siri, for example, or what holds back?
Yeah, I think it's multifactorial. I think one is a lot of people got burned over the last 5 years trying to do like Alexa skills, et cetera. And so they just put it in this box of like voice isn't a big deal for us because we tried it, it didn't work. So I think that's held it back. I think there's a trust mechanic that's problematic amongst users. So when you think about human trust, what causes trust? There's affective or emotional trust. Like, do you like a person or do you like a thing? And that, you know, in theory gets formed within seconds of meeting someone, et cetera. And then there's cognitive trust or rational trust, which is built over a long period of time which basically is, does this person or thing do what they say they're going to do? And so voice has kind of failed on both, right? It failed on the emotional trust because of a theory called the Uncanny Valley, which was developed in Japan in the 1970s, which stated that the more human-like you made a robot, the less people trusted it.
Right.
Because they still knew it was not a human, right?
Yeah,
and so
yeah.
Like people talk about like the movie Polar Express, like people were just freaked out about like the characters in that movie. And we've tried to create these voice personas, and most of us think they're weird, and most of us don't trust them. And the more human-like they are, but we still know they're not human, the less we trust them.
Right.
And so that's another reason to go to multimodal. Like if you just ask an app to get you the movies and it gives you the movies, now you're not evaluating it on that trust basis. You're evaluating it on the cognitive trust basis. Does it do what it say it's going to do? And so this trust thing has been broken. And I'm not even talking about the privacy and some of the other issues that have also impacted trust, just purely the user interface. I think those are going to get solved. And I think as users start to get, you know, they're going to start seeing this mic button everywhere. You see it in your Waze app. You see it in your Spotify app. People ask me, like, how do you know you're right? How will you know that voice is here? And my answer is usually you're going to start seeing the mic icon or something like it in every app. And it will be your first place that you go when you want to reserve a flight on your American Airlines app. You're not going to like go to drop downs and blah, blah, blah. You're just going to say, I need a flight on March 8th from JFK to LAX.
Yep.
And that'll be that. And you'll have hit the mic button in the app. And so that's kind of what I think we're going towards. And as users see it and then companies see other companies doing it, it's going to happen. I think what we don't know is what the second and third order impacts are and how industries are going to get disrupted by this. We try to take a run at it in the book and say, look, you take the fast food industry. Step one is you just order in your app, right? It's a little faster than ordering. I mean, by voice in the app, it's a little faster. It's meaningfully faster, but it's not life-changing to order it in the app. The next thing is, all of a sudden it changes how a McDonald's is designed because you don't need human beings anymore to take orders. The next question becomes, well, is the concept of a restaurant even make sense anymore in the way it is today? Or are you just going to be ordering things verbally and there's going to be a pickup location? And so you kind of get to this second, third order thing that, again, is the Uber example from mobile devices. Like, 3-4 years after, you know, Uber didn't come out in 2008. It came out like 2 years later. And it really was just a ride-hailing mechanism for limos in San Francisco. And then it changes the world. And so that's, you know, we don't know, you know, none of us know what the second, third order of things is. But that's where it gets really interesting is if things are so much more efficient on your mobile device, how does it completely change industries? Like, why do you need, and this is what I, you know, when we talk to executives, I always ask them, when a human being says something, the information is out there. And so we should be saying they should only have to say it once, right? Like if you think about a waiter in the restaurant, what's their job when you're making an order? Is they're interpreting what we're saying and then they're typing it by hand into a system. So it's a really slow system. Or if you're visiting your doctor these days, right? My doctor sits on the computer the entire time. So now we've got one of the most highest paid, kind of not enough doctors in this country, and they're spending they're spending time transcribing what I'm saying as a human being, whereas really the system should be listening to me and interpreting what I'm saying real time and might have insights that the doctor doesn't have, or at least the doctor can focus on me. And so that's kind of one of the things I ask people to think about when they're creating these journey maps. Like if a human being has said something, in theory, something should happen. Like
right.
A system somewhere should be picking up on that.
Let's talk a little bit about kind of the scaling side of this, because voice-based interfaces have the ability to scale far beyond, you know, human conversations and what, you know, two individuals could do. And you've told some interesting stories in your book about like voice bot helplines during the COVID pandemic, for example. What does it take to scale a voice application from a business or technology perspective?
Yeah. So one of the things that there's a lot of businesses that are being transformed by voice, but nothing more than customer service, right? Because that world of the IVR and some automated responses that are really highly rules driven and often not very good at actually interpreting what human beings are asking them, or you kind of have to force humans to select numbers to actually figure out what they're saying. That's going to change fundamentally. So that's kind of one box. Another box is if you can have voice interfaces in the app, and you're answering questions in the app, even if you had the same response in an IVR, it's 80 to 90% less expensive to do it in the app, because there's no phone call going out. There's no connectivity costs. It's just pure data. It's just sitting inside the app. As more of the compute power and the work actually gets done on device, which is the trend, because it's so much more faster, you're not even spending money on data for either the user or the provider. So the economics of providing these kind of LLM-based voice experiences and customer support experiences in the app are, you know, they're just so obvious, right? We just did a study for the bank that we could reduce the cost of their calls by about 92% by adopting some of these technologies versus what they were having to do now, asking people for certain certain reasons to call 800 numbers.
Yeah.
And so the voice adoption is not just going to be driven by the fact that it's a better user interface. It's going to be much less expensive. And it's rare, by the way, that you get a technology that both lowers costs and gives users a better experience.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And can add so much to those conversations too. I mean, like a contact center type of example, you know, you talk about it's not only having the AI agent essentially, you know, answer some easy questions or be able to handle that directly with, you know, edge computing in the app itself. But also when you do get into the contact center, sort of like the doctor example that you gave too, of the essentially AI listening into the voice conversation and providing an agent assist out to the agent too. Of, you know, here's an upsell that you can offer them. Here's, you know, an FAQ from our system, right, that we can bring up. And those are things that are so much more powerful than the traditional, you know, intent mapping that IVR systems do too. So yeah, it opens up so many possibilities for efficiency on both ends of those conversations. So yeah, I think it's really a fascinating area. Do you, at WillowTree, do you find yourself leveraging frameworks like Amazon Lex or ChatGPT, or, you know, where's this line that people need between something off the shelf and a more custom model?
We test it all. We leverage it all. I think we're still so early on that side of the, you know, equation. What we really counsel our clients to do is not to get into vendor lock-in, right? Don't hard code everything you're doing on any of the solutions. Whether it's ChatGPT or, you know, OpenAI, whether it's the Amazon suite, the Google suite, because pricing is going to change a lot, capabilities are going to change a lot, open source models are going to arrive. And so what's really, really important right now as you integrate these solutions into the enterprise is that you keep a proxy layer of some sort so that you can easily optimize for solutions over time, because it's going to change so fast. And you want to keep the leverage and don't want to be locked in as the prices switch. And you know, the where you use inference is going to change over time, right? If I'm designing whether it's a voice or a chat interface using Gen AI, I don't want to spend money on the inference for like the early part of the conversation, like what's the password or how to authenticate or the greeting, like that all needs to be rules-based and free basically. And then you start spending money on the inference as you get deeper into the conversation and the rules-based system starts to lose track or becomes non-optimized in terms of what its interpretation is or how it can respond. That's going to be like, that's a really interesting place, right? It's that's what a lot of the work that's being done in the industry is all about right now.
Yeah. So appropriate use and combining of rules based and more generative AI is important. I really like the advice too around putting in a proxy layer there, because the other thing I've heard people say, and you know, in the enterprise too, is, you know, yes, you need to start working with these cutting edge technologies now, but because they're cutting edge, because this is changing so fast, be prepared for the fact that 2 years from now, you're going to completely change the guts of how it works, you know, to a different vendor or whatever. And so having that proxy layer would help with that for sure. Do you find that this is changing the way that you hire for tech roles in your organization? It's not just software developers, right? There's a lot of at least AI understanding if they're not actual, you know, data scientists of some sort themselves.
The demand for data scientists is off the charts, right? Right now in the United States, for every data scientist, there's 5 open positions. So it's a good time to be a data scientist.
Yeah, take note, college students.
Yeah. What's interesting is when we look at performance, and this is a little bit of an aside, but I think a really important observation is, when we look at our software developers using tool sets like Copilots, GitHub Copilot as an example, the folks that get the most benefit out of it are the most developed and experienced engineers. And you'd think it'd be the opposite. You'd think it'd be a way for everyone to get to some sort of level playing field. But the people that really understand how to write software really understand how to use these tools to optimize it. And the people that are more novice, I think, they don't really know how it all works, and they think that tools can do things that they can't, and then they make mistakes. And so it's a really interesting phenomenon right now and how that's all coming together. On the other end of the extreme, for very early days as a developer, they can also be, so it's almost like a bathtub curve that it helps folks at the beginning and it helps the most for the really kind of deep into it, intellectually curious folks. I think the jobs, there's going to be a lot more around conversational design. Obviously, we talk about prompt engineering as a theoretical job going forward. I think around testing, automated testing, there's going to be an extraordinary amount of work, because the testing of this stuff and getting executive teams, boards comfortable that these models can't be jailbroken or can't do things that they don't want them to do, I think that's also a big part of the Rust right now. And, you know, this fuzzy testing or whatever you want to call it, the fact that you can't, you know, if you're testing an app or a website, it's pretty basic, right? Like you can try and like inject things into certain boxes. But other than that, it's pretty like, if I click this, does it do this? Like, it's all rules based. And now testing is the new frontier, right? And it's a combination of automated testing, manual testing, guardrails. You know, that's I think the really intellectual, interesting part of the puzzle right now.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I'm glad you brought up testing, because, yeah, I agree. That's with the multimodal interfaces, as well as the wide variety of like voice inputs I could give to a system, to try it. There's 1,000 ways I could say the same thing, make the same request. Confirming that sort of thing, as well as concerns about jailbreaking and data privacy and all of that sort of thing. So yeah, that's a really interesting area to explore further. I wish we had more time to explore it now, but we're coming up to the end of our time, Tobias, but this has been a really excellent conversation. I really appreciate you taking the time to speak with us. How can our listeners get in touch with you for more information, and where can they buy a copy of your book, The Sound of the Future?
So Sound of the Future, you can buy Amazon, Barnes & Noble, at your favorite bookstore. It's actually, I recently saw it in a bunch of airport bookstores. So that was exciting. Nice. And fun. I saw it with my son, who now actually thought his dad did something cool. The good thing about having a unique name is I'm the only Tobias Dengel on LinkedIn. So that's the easiest place to find me, or come to our company website, which is willowtreeapps.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Tobias. Real pleasure to have you joining us today. Congratulations on the book, and best of luck.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Scaling Tech Podcast. Please like, comment, and subscribe.